blaze and I'm an addict. First of all, I'd like to say how honored I am to be here. This is interesting. I've never been to a convention where there was two different languages. This is really neat. I was born and raised in Atlantic City, and from the very beginning, I felt different about myself because I was born big. I thought I'd mention that in case you didn't notice. And I didn't like it. I came from a very good family, and I had a very, very good childhood. But I didn't like me. I wanted to be a ballerina. I went to tap and ballet class, and I really wanted to be a ballerina, but I kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I left ballet class. And I was the type of person that if I did things well, maybe you couldn't see how big I was. And so I never wanted to do anything that I didn't know anything about. And the last day of ballerina class, I had went and there's this long bar that goes along the mirror, and you have to put your leg up to the back of your head. And I couldn't put mine without the teacher's help, and the kids laughed, and I ran away. And I ran home. For a couple of years there, I was really bad. I would get my sister and brother in trouble, and I would do things to aggravate everybody. And then one day, when I was in junior high, somebody came to me and said, "Barbie, you want to go to the roller skating rink?" And I really did not know anything about roller skating, so I really didn't want to go. But because there was a couple of cute guys going with it, I decided to go. And I found out I could roller skate. And I loved it because I had people cheering for me, and I liked that. It was something outside of myself to make me feel good. And so I became involved in the roller derby instead of being a ballerina girl. My mother, I'm starting to understand so much more about myself and my story because they're writing a book and doing a movie on my life story, so I'm dictating and really, really getting into it. But it's amazing how God does things. And in the earlier years, there were so many people that said they liked my story, but I just didn't pay any attention to it and how it came into play after I had been in the program and started to work the steps and got an NA sponsor. And then, and only then, could I really understand what happened to me. I got involved in the roller and my father was a police. He was sergeant of the police force. My mother was a supervisor of telephone. Like I said, very, very good. And when I got in high school, I was in a sorority and I sang in my church choir. Popular. I was very fortunate, though, when I was younger. If the kids pulled out, you better not do that because my daddy will arrest you and you'll go to jail. And thank God they believed me. You see. So I really didn't have the suffering that kids can inflict upon each other because of that. And when I was in high school, like I said, I was popular because I was in the roller derby. I was bad. 9:30 siren at 9:30, and if you're 16, and this is early 92, you got considered a job if you weren't in the house after 9:30 at night. And I was in a lot of competition, so I would get home late. And I was dating an 18-year-old kid, and he had a hot rod, and he was tall, and he had blonde hair and blue eyes. And that made me popular. And he had a hot rod, and that was really the thing. And I would come home late. My mother would call me a bad girl. In my religion, and I was very involved in my church, I'm Episcopalian, in those years, in the early 50s, it was very, very important to be a virgin. And I was. Because if you're a virgin, that means God loves you, and I wanted God to love me. And when my mother would accuse me of these things, I would break things, and I would scream and holler at her, and she was afraid of me. She was a very dainty lady. She was born and raised in Scotland and very straight-laced. and I was just me. And I was a letdown to her. She also had a little ballerina girl, and I wasn't. And we used to fight about it. And she would call me, and she didn't believe me that I was still a good girl. So my mother and the priest and the doctor decided to take me to juvenile court as a delinquent. And I went to the court, and I stood before the judge, and I believed in my heart that nothing made me, because I was a virgin, and that God loved me. And that judge sentenced me to Clinton State Prison for women. And I was 16 years old, and I weighed what I weigh, almost what I weigh now. In fact, I weighed less now than I did then. And some guy stood up in the courtroom. He said, "Your Honor, don't you mean to stay home for girls? This child's only 16 years old." And his honor said, quote, unquote, "I mean Clinton State Penitentiary. Look at the size of her." And I went away with the worst kind of prejudice there is for my size, because I was a big girl. And the doctor had said that I was killing my mother, and I believe the judge took it literally. I would scream and holler at her, and she would get upset and cry and fall out, and the doctor would come and give her medicine. I guess that's what he meant. And I was devastated. I was absolutely devastated. I knew nothing about drugs. I had had my boyfriend and I, because I knew I was going away, I went to Seawalt, and we had a pint of whiskey. We each tasted it. I had never drank, didn't smoke. I was a virgin. I knew nothing.
Homosexuality, of violence. I knew nothing of this stuff. And when they said it, and I didn't even say it, I was in, because I had a record of with the girls. Do this better. And it was. They took me on to remember, which I'm just now. If that judge, how could you do me? How could you my face and do me? And they took me to court, and I went and I thought it was an institution for me, and I thought it was ever crazy. They beat me up, they pushed me around. They called me fatty. My father's name meant nothing to them.
I was scared to death. I used to lay in my bed every night, cry myself to sleep and say, "I can't stand this place another day." And I would think about my boyfriend who tried to get in the courtroom and tell his side of the story. They wouldn't even let him in. And the authorities in Clinton wrote to the judge, and they wanted to know what I was doing there at the age of 16 and in the condition I was, being a virgin, I guess. But the judge had an ego problem. He didn't like his decisions disturbed. So he sent back to Clinton that I had indeterminate sentence. When you're 16 years old, that means 5 years. When the news got back to me, I had a nervous breakdown, because I didn't know how I was going to do 5 years. I couldn't even do another day in this place. This time when I came out of the infirmary, a lifer took me under her wing and she says, "Blaze, I'm going to teach you how to make it in this place for the next 5 years. You know, brown help they get. I want you to put human emotions in it, save one, hate. And I'm going to teach you how to make hate your best friend." She was a good teacher. I was a good pupil. Then one day she came up to me and she said, "Here, Blaze, try some of this." And it was hooch. We went real good in jail because we can't make that much of it, so we have to make it strong. Found out if I swallowed the hooch, you put me up there and I could look down on you and say, "Damn you, world, I am okay." A little bit longer she came and said, "Here, Blaze, try some of these." I found out if I swallowed the hooch and I took the pills, it put me a little higher and I could look down on you and say, "Damn you, world." She taught me many other little goodies. And I learned well. The punishment in those years, and this was in 1952, was they take you down the basement and they put you up against the stone wall and the fire hoses on you. They said that year because a girl died. And it was my turn because I was being bad. So they took me downstairs and I was in the back. And I got downstairs and I braced myself against the wall like this, because on the way down one of the girls said, "Don't let him hit you in the stomach, Blaze, and never have a baby." I thought about that. I hadn't even used this thing yet. fell down.
I braced myself against the wall, and they put the fire hoses on me. And I thought they had changed their mind and set me on fire. It was excruciating. I could hear screaming out there. I couldn't get the screaming there, the pain here, and all in me, and I passed out. When I came to, I was laying on the floor in the hole, bent backwards, had no skin on my back. I had thrown up on myself. I went to the bathroom on myself. And I know I had been there a couple of days because the door has a little window in it. And they put your food in. If you're not there to catch it, it goes on the floor. And it was a pile of food over there, so I know I had been there a day or two. And I laid on the floor in excruciating pain. And I prayed myself and my God never to show any human emotions again as I was to live. And I did a good act. At the time I was 17 years old, I committed my first murder. Justified, of course. You know, we have an honor. There's an honor among thieves. There's certain things we don't tolerate, and child abuse is one of them. And this girl had come in. She had her 3-year-old to death. Getting ready to go out. So we beat her to death. I was working my way up the ladder. By the time I was 17 and a half, I committed a second murder. When I was 18 years old, they said to me, if you'll behave yourself, we'll let you go home on parole. And I wanted to go home so bad. I wanted to get out of this place and leave this nightmare behind me. And I was good. And they did give me a parole. And I went home. But you see, I didn't know any other way to live. And I went home, and all the way home, I kept saying to myself, I'm going to leave this nightmare behind me. I'm going to go out there to my church friends, my skating friends, and everything's going to be just like it was and like it never happened. And I got home on a Saturday night. And Sunday morning, I spent all morning getting dressed to go to church. You see, all my friends. And I went to church, and they were gathered outside before services, and I went up to my best girlfriend, and I said, hi, Pat. They asked me, I wasn't even there. And she was one of my sorority sisters that used to sleep at my house. I used to sleep at her house. She looked right by me like I wasn't even there. And I didn't sing in the choir that day. I sat in the congregation. And nobody in that church even looked at me. I guess they were afraid if they looked at me, they would catch whatever it was that I went through. You see, I didn't know that when I went away, the people who didn't like me spread a lot of bad stories about me. They didn't know why I went away. I didn't know why I went away. So the stories became stories. And by the time I got home, nobody wanted anything to do with me. And I ran home. And I went in my room and I cried. In the meantime, the boyfriend that I was going with when I went to Clinton had joined the Navy so he could be punished like I was. And he had come up there to visit me. He wrote me every week. He brought my mother to see me when he was home on leave. He went to the Navy board to get us married. 2 months before I got parole. But you see, by the time, I was so full of hate, I was so full of anger, that when he asked me to marry him, I said no. Because I had to hurt somebody. I had to hurt somebody like I was being hurt. And he was the only one that loved me. So I hurt him, I said no. And that day I ran home from church. I ran to my room and I cried. And then I get up and I ran to the phone and I called him. And his mother answered the phone. And he told me he had just gotten married. And I knew there was nothing else out here for me. And I just stayed in my room. And my mother came in one day and she says, you know, Barbara, you don't have to live like this. I said, oh, yes, I do. And a girl came out of prison after about a week. And she called me up and she said, hey, Blaze, you want to go out? And I said, you got it. She took me out. She took me on the north side of Atlantic City and she introduced me to heroin. And I loved it. I loved it. I didn't give it to him. I didn't need those people. I didn't need anyone. I had found something.
to put me even higher, and I could look down on you and say, damn you, world. I am okay. I don't remember too much about the next 2 months. All I remember is going back to Clinton. See, in those days, if you were even seen with ex-offenders, you went back to jail. And I was on the wrong side of town, I didn't have a job, and I was hanging out with ex-offenders. Back I went. Only this time, I'm Jones in big time. I don't want no hooch, I don't want no pills, I want some heroin. When I got back there, I jumped a big lady, and the guards jumped me, and they threw me in a hole, and that's where I stayed for the next 18 months in total darkness. A month before I turned 21, they brought me out. I was temporarily blind, and I had little sunglasses. My eyes were taped. And they took me before the board, and they said, now you go home and be a lady here. See, I took prison home with me because I didn't know any other way to live. And when I went home, I was living, sort of living with this guy. And I hadn't let him touch me yet because I had never had a man. And he took me to a dance. And I was dancing with a friend of his. And he hit me. And I took him outside and I killed him. We were both in a car going to the Lake City Hospital. And all the way we had a car accident. Grace of God, he died in a car accident. But I almost did too. But I lived. And they called my mother at 1:30 in the morning. They told her to come to the hospital and identify me. I was in the morgue. I was DOA. Thank God my mother didn't go anywhere without either the priest or the doctor, depending on the occasion. So this time she took the doctor. He worked on me and I lived. And they told my mother. My mother said, that figures. And I went back to jail. And this time I went before the same judge. And I pleaded self-defense. His Honor said, when the victim is dead, it's not self-defense. He died in a car accident. The only thing that kept me from getting murdered once. I got a atrocious assault and battery with a deadly weapon with intent to kill. I got 5 to 7. And he says, maybe this time Barbie will learn something. I spit in his face, but I still went back to jail. 3 years later, and one more murder later, I was paroled. I went in jail when I was 16 years old, and I come out when I was 24. They're the years that you, any psychiatrist or counselor will tell you, they're the years that you become who you're going to be the rest of your life. You build a personality in these years, and I became who I was going to be for the rest of my life. This time when I came home, though, I did discover something real good. I discovered men. I don't know which is worse, the heroin or the men. I'm sure the ladies can understand what I'm talking about. Did you ever try to get over a man? I know. I got married and I had 4 lovely, lovely children. But I didn't know how to love them because I did not know how to love. And my husband and I had a problem. I could fight better than him. We would be in a bar somewhere, and he would be shooting pool, and somebody would mess with him, and I would hit them in the head with a pool stick. He said, that's my job. You're embarrassing me. As the children came along, I couldn't afford the drugs. See, my husband, when he met me, I was in a bar, and I was dancing, and And I was having a lot of fun, and I was drinking ginger ale. And he thought I was a good girl. Yeah. He didn't even know I was a drug addict. He didn't even know. Yeah, I became a hairdresser. The one good thing I got out of the penitentiary was I became a hairdresser so I could support my habit. And I can remember one night we were playing Pinochle, and there was a fifth of vodka sitting on the table. And I was jonesing my ass off, and I couldn't get out the comp. And I drank that vodka. All through the night, I drank it up. And it didn't take me anywhere. It just kept my jones off my back a little bit so I could get out of there the next day and cop. You know, I hear people talk about social drinking. I didn't social anything. Nothing. When I started using drugs, it was dive right in. When I met men, it was dive right in. Anything, I dove right in and did it my way. The violence became terrible. I can remember being in the beauty shop one day, combing out a head. And I looked at my boss, and he was just getting married. He had just gotten married, and he was just going to have a baby. And he was singing, and his eyes were shining. And I said, I wonder what that feels like. I wonder what it feels like to love somebody and be glad you're alive. See, I didn't know how that felt. I didn't want to know what it felt like to be a movie star or the president of the United States. I just wanted to know what it felt like to love somebody. I didn't know what that felt like. And I would go home at night on the bus, and I'd look around me. And I would look at people and I'd say, does everybody go home to what I go home to? Four babies haven't eaten yet. Still in their pajamas if their father hadn't beat them half to death. And a drunken husband, does everybody go home to this? And then we got to fight. With all the violence and disruption in my house, I realized after looking at my babies, that my babies were paying my dues, and I had to get out of there. I had to get out of there and go out in that world and find a place for me and my children and go out and find what other people have. But see, if you're like me and you got this gorilla on the back and you've got nothing inside, you're not going to find what other people have. I put my children in a foster home and I went out in this world to get what other people have. But it didn't work. I only became more violent. I used to beat up cops, something terrible. I was dancing. I was a go-go dancer at night and a hairdresser during the day so I could support my habit. I found, in the meantime, my drug of choice, speed. I was a speed addict for 20 years and I never lost a pound. The justice here. My friends were like pencils, you know? Not a pound, gang. Not a pound. But I became more violent. And one night I was dancing it, and one of the girls came up on the stage and said, Blaze, the cops are here. And I had like $400 of good meth upstairs. So I ran outside. I had this cop that we went to high school together. And he wanted to go with me. The only reason I wouldn't go with him was because he was a cop. So every time we saw each other, we used to fight terrible. I ran outside. I saw Mike. I beat him up. I threw his dog against the car, his gun across the street. He's got his head under the fender. Help, back up. Somebody help me. When I was in the program about a year and a half, my Michael came in the program. And I called my sponsor and said, oh my God, Mike's coming in here and we're going to fight. By this time, the programs and the rooms had become a church to me. And I didn't want to fight in these rooms. And my sponsor said, Barbara, God runs the program, not you. And that night he came to me and I was chair and I called on him. He said, it was so good to see me up here. And I said, it was so good to see him. You've got to understand the hatred between us. After the meeting, we hugged. It was as though it was all removed just because we were in this program. It got so bad they would send 2 or 3 cars at a time or don't even bother, depending. And then I said, I can't live like this. I'll get the children. That'll make it all right. As you notice, I haven't blamed anything on the drugs or the booze. It was always situations or people. So I thought, I got the children back. I said, this will make it work. But this time they came and took the children away from me and told me I would never have them again. I finally lost a job after 17 years being a hairdresser. And I lost my apartment, and I was living in a abandoned house in the inlet. A year before this, when I was working in the beauty shop, I fell out, and they took me to the hospital because they didn't know what was wrong with me. And they x-rayed my whole body, and they found out that some of my ribs were broken as much as 14 or 15 times. I had a couple of shoulder bones broken and massive scar tissue on my back from the beatings. You know, the girls used to say, Blaze, don't let them guards beat on you like that. Because you're going to pay for it when you get old. Of course, I used to say, I'm never getting old. Guess who got old? Oh, God. The pain. I was living in a abandoned house in the inlet. I had a ringing in my ears. The big Blaze. The one that no one could ever break. I did 8 years in a penitentiary standing on an eyebrow. I never shed a tear. I was crawling around on my hands and knees in an abandoned house. I was hallucinating blood out of the ceiling. I thought I had killed my best friend. I had bugs. I was scratching up and down my arms, bugs that weren't there. I had a fist of vodka in one arm, and I had tracks up and down the others. I had no people, places, and things to blame this dilemma on at this point but me. I said, oh, God, help me. Not that I believed for 1 minute there was anything connected to the word God. But see, that dude left me way back that day in the courtroom. We always say, God, help me. A thought came in my head. When I was in Clinton, they had these meetings for these alcoholics. It was called AA. Where I come from, it's cool to be an addict. It's cool to be a junkie. It's a drag to be an alcoholic. So we beat these girls up. But the thought of AA came in my mind. And I called my girlfriend. I said, Inky, you guys swear on your mother's eyes. You don't tell nobody what I'm going to tell you. She didn't know what was coming out of my mouth. And I said, I want to go to AA. And she started to cry. And she says, you come home with me and I'll take you to this place. And her and her boyfriend took me to my first meeting. And I walked in a room and somebody came over and they said, welcome. I had never heard that word. I had never heard that word. And she came over to me and she wanted to take my hand. She says, would you like a cup of coffee? It's going to be all right. And I backed off. Where I come from, you don't let nobody close enough to you unless you're either going to fight or fuck. She says, it's going to be all right. And I said to myself, what's her angle? You just have a seat and listen. So I went all the way back against the wall. Me and the wallpaper did a number. See, because I'm a speed freak, I couldn't get against the wall. And I looked around a room and I read the signs on the wall, thinking that would help. And up there it said, "But for the grace of God." I said, "Oh no. He's been here too." "He's not going to let me have this thing. You know that, don't you?" And somebody came over to me and said, "Dear, do you think you could stay away from a drink one day at a time?" I said, "Sure." I was for drugs. They didn't offer. I didn't volunteer. My sponsor told me that when they come through that door laughing, they're not ready. You come through that door hurting, you're ready. I wasn't ready. I wanted to learn how to use drugs and drink and be a lady. Imagine that. You know, it's amazing. You hear what you want to hear. But I kept coming back because I saw these people. And they had a glitter in their eyes. And they had an air about them. And they were touching each other. And I wanted that. So I kept coming back. And then I heard somebody say something about getting involved. So I immediately looked around the room to see who I was going to get involved with. And then they told me, no, that's wrong. You can't have any relationships for a year. I said, "Who can?" I have 10 years of recovery in my head now, full of drugs, and I had 2 months, and they needed somebody to go to a 12-step call, so I, of course, here's the recovering person, I'll go save them. She was in a bar, and she was drinking, so I got there late, so I joined her. Because my drugs told me, that's cool that they have that place up there for them lames that have to go to this program. I'm cool. I'm the blaze. I don't need that. And people, let me tell you, the penitentiary took every ounce of fear in me that I ever knew. But that night, when I swallowed that drink, I had just a tinge of fear came over me. I said, "Oh my God, those people are right." But I finished that night being the addict that I am. And the next day, I crawled through them doors and I said, "Help me." And that was on September the 18th of 1973, and I have not had a drink or a drug since. I went to those meetings and I talked about my drugs because they were my problem. And they said, "No, honey, you can't do that. You have to go away. You're different." I said, "I don't think you know who I am." "You don't tell me to go nowhere." So I stayed and I talked about my drugs. But we have a loving God. And God sent to me a recovering addict so we could have AA over there to get well and we could have me over here get well. He sent me a recovering addict, Dutch, a very sick recovering addict. And Dutch said to me, "Hey, Blaze, did you ever hear Narcotics Anonymous?" I said, "No, what's that?" He says, "Come on, I'll take you this weekend." We worked hard all week and we got Dutch's van and we went to Philadelphia, 10th and a Boulevard. And I walked in a room full of kids. there was something about that night when I walked in that room. It was like a thump in my head. And I believe today that thump was I finally closed the doors on prison. I was home. I had attended my... I had attended my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, and it was different, and it was ours, and nobody told us, go away, we were different. We didn't have many rules and regulations either. And I ran right back to Atlantic City, and 15 and a half years ago, I started Narcotics Anonymous in my living room in Atlantic City. So I want to send away for a beginner's kit, because I know in the other fellowship they have this great big thing, it's a beginner's kit. So I sent to Sun Valley for a beginner's kit. And they sent back to me, with a stamp on the envelope, move, no forwarding address. It's the World Service of Narcotics Anonymous, people. God. I got on the phone, I said, Dutch, we're dead. There's no more Narcotics Anonymous. I mean, we can laugh today, but it wasn't funny. I was petrified to death. I just knew I was going to die. We were going to die. We were lost. It was over. And we hurry up and ran up to Philadelphia. And Jimmy said, no, 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 no. No, Blaze, they just moved. Oh, thank God, to Van Nuys. So we run home, and I sent away for the beginner's kit to Van Nuys. Still waiting for my big package. And the mailman came with a little envelope. And in the envelope was a thin gray book. And on the outside, it was only 10 or 12 pages to the whole book. And it says, this is N.A. An inventory list and a serenity prayer. That was the whole program. Now, we didn't have rules and regulations, so we were kind of big-headed. We used to show dirty movies after the meetings. I'm told I had the best collection in town. And we 13-stepped everybody. But I'll tell you something we did have. A connection. We had a connection. Our motto was, you know, pick up if your balls fall off. It was about getting another day clean in. And we read this little book, and we had real honest-to-God meetings, but all it was comparing war stories. We didn't get well. And as the years went on, when I first came to the program, I had a beauty shop drop in my lap. I was very, very lucky. And I was living in Margate Towers in the penthouse, and I had Dutch living with me. And I had to look out my window and see the whole city of Atlantic City. And I said, this is owed to me. The world owes me this. People, let me tell you something. The world don't owe you nothing. You owe you. That's right. And if you're ungrateful, I don't know about your higher power, but my higher power, if I'm not grateful for what he's given me, he'll take it back. And I'm walking up there, the world owes me this. And that year, gambling came through in Atlantic City. And these four men in a suit came to my beauty shop, one of my beauty shops. If I learned nothing else in the early days, it was, if you're dishonest, you'll pick up. Because I had seen it happen. And I wouldn't give him my beauty shop. I wouldn't be dishonest. And I lost everything I had, and I had to go live with my mother. Here's this woman and I had nothing in common. I hadn't been here in 20 years, 20-some years. We don't understand God's will when we're in the dilemma of it. I thought that was so, yo, where are you? I'm being a good girl. You know, I'm being a good girl. I was mad at God because I didn't understand. because we had no program about patience and tolerance and God's will. And I went and I lived with my mother. But a good thing happened. My mother and I became friends. I found that, you know, we as addicts are so self-centered, we think we're the only ones that hurt. I found out how the devastation upon my mother with that murder in the paper, and she was supervised at telephone company. And my sister and brother had to go to school in that town. The devastation I put upon them. I found out how other members of the family died. We became friends. I had made my mother's dreams come true all my life. She prayed to God that I would be a lady. And then I was there about a year, and I sang in the church choir. So Dutch and everybody from NA came to see me. This you've got to see, me in a choir robe. And they came. And we called my mother to tell her that we were going to be late because we were going to be at the diner. And there was no answer. And we went home and we found my mother dead. And I didn't know how to handle this. I knew I was supposed to be doing something, but I didn't know why. So I got upset. I had an asthma attack. It's the only thing I knew how to do. I didn't know how to cry. And we called the kids in Philadelphia, and they came down. And the kids of Narcotics Anonymous carried my pain, and God carried me, and we got through it. I didn't need a drink or a drug to get through it. I had God, and I had Narcotics Anonymous. Right after that, the doctor told me, right? Right after that, the doctor told me I had to give up being a hairdresser because my asthma was getting really, really bad. What am I going to do? It's my whole life. I'm 40 years old. Where am I going? But because I have a loving God who loves me very, very much, within a few months, I was able to start going to school, and I became a certified addictions counselor, a CAC, and I was working. Working in a rehab, and I met a guy. This is the 31st guy I had met, you understand? He said to me, Blaze, I want to give you the ultimate gift of love. Not what we know from the streets, but the gift of love. And he lived with me for a whole month, and we had no sex. I knew how he liked his eggs in the morning. I knew what his dreams were. He was a jazz musician, and we used to take his tapes and lay on the beach with a blanket and a towel and watch the sun come up and talk to each other in total silence. We got to know each other. And then we went to bed. Phew, good God. You know, my sponsor told me, you know, there's more to love than sex. I said, get out. If we went to bed together, we were in love and you're my man and that's the end of it. She was right. There's a lot more to love than sex. I'll tell you what love did for me. I walked down the street. I thought I was skinny. I thought I was beautiful. No, wait. I still can't handle that yet, but wait a minute. I worked at Detox by now, and he would call up to see if I was going to get the bus home or if somebody was going to bring me so he could meet me at the bus to protect my body. Now, wait a minute. I have never been raped or mugged or held hostage. I mean, some girls get all the breaks. If I spoke too loud, I could clear a bar. If I said, what? Gone. Everybody. It felt so good to be a girl. You know, I'm not a liberated woman. I do not believe in liberated women, except for equal pay. Or that they should get whatever they want. Wait a minute. No, wait. I wanted to put my apron on and go in somebody's kitchen and spoil my man rotten. My man is my boss. And I love the man that can make me feel like a little girl. That's what love did for me. Because I've been liberated all my life. It stinks. Really, I've taken every man's manhood away from him. Today I don't do that. I'm a girl today. I'm not a little one, but I'm a girl. I'm going to tell you something. I'm not pleased with this earth body at all. And until the day I die, I'm sure I still won't be. But I'll tell you one thing. I love what's in it today. My Jack, him and I, we got engaged to be married, and we were together 2 years. And I came home from work, and my Jack had picked up. It took my Jack 9 weeks to die. He came in this program once. He picked up once, and he died once. Let me tell you something, sweetheart. 35 people died that you sit in that chair tonight. Do you know that? It's an honor to sit in a chair in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I have a chair. I have a chair everywhere I go. And do you know how valuable that chair is to me? It's mine. I earned it. And I can almost count the 35 people that died from my chair. And I didn't know how I was going to get over Jack. And so I only went with men who were very sick. So I didn't fall in love. But I did. I fell in love with somebody very sick. When you lay down with dogs, you come up with fleas. When you lay down with someone sick, you come up sick. Don't find somebody sick. because you've only got a half a person. And this is the only time two halves don't make a whole. And I mean that, ladies. We have such a tendency to make them well. Come home with mother, she'll make you well. He made me sick. It was as though somebody had cut me open and dragged me along the gravel. I couldn't deal with this. I didn't know feelings of the heart. I have a great tolerance of physical pain. But I don't know pain about the heart. You see, because I fell in love for the first time in my life when I was 44 years old with Jack. And I fell in love like a child. But I hurt like a woman when he died. And I don't know how to handle that kind of hurt that women feel. It's so new to me. And I don't have scars as teachers. And my sponsor told me he had to go. And at the same time, I had just had major surgery. And my doctor now tells me I can't work nowhere because of my asthma. What am I going to do? I have to throw him out. What's left for me? How selfish that is. When God gave me the greatest gift in the world, he gave me the gift of life. And like I said earlier, if you're not grateful, God will take back what he's given you. You see, I have a third disease. It's called terminally cool. I can't let you know that some man hurt me. So I put on my face and did my hair and I went to meetings and I put out my pearls of wisdom and showed everybody how he didn't hurt me. And I would come home and I said, I don't care if I take the next breath, I want to die. I didn't want to pick up. I just wanted to die. I had never contemplated suicide, not once in my addiction. Because I didn't know this kind of pain. My God said, fine. And he pulled the plug on me. And I had a massive heart attack. And I laid on my bedroom floor. And I remember another floor I laid on a long time ago in the penitentiary. Something said, I got a lot of love to give, and I have a lot of love to get, and I wanted to live. So I said to God, can we talk about this? I changed my mind. And I was 9 days and nights in the hospital, intensive care, and I came home and something was different, but I didn't know what it was. I hadn't been working a program. See, Dutch and I, we sponsored each other, and we sponsored everybody. They would ask us about steps, but we didn't know what the hell they were talking about, so. And you don't have to do the steps, you know, if you don't want to. If you can handle the pain and the dues that come with that baby, let me tell you, I couldn't, and I thought I was the greatest thing that hit this place. Dutch come knocking on my door and he says, you want to go speak at a convention in Virginia? This was in 1984. I said, okay. And we went to Virginia. And every once in a while, Dutch and I run away and we dump on each other really, really good. And I had done that. And by the time I got there, I felt funny. But I didn't pay any attention to it. And the next day, we got up and we went to a woman's meeting. The first time in my life I had been to a woman's meeting. I had 10 and a half years clean, never been to a woman's meeting. And there was this little girl sitting on the floor, and she was about 17 or 18 years old. She had 3 or 4 months clean time, and she was pouring her heart out in front of all these women. Crying in front of all these women and telling all these women about how a man hurt her and what he had done to her. That honesty smacked me in the face. Her kind of honesty I have no idea about. She had more honesty in her little finger than I will ever know. And I ran out of that room. And I ran upstairs in my room. And I'm sitting on the edge of the bed. And I couldn't get a sentence together. I couldn't think. And I'm supposed to be the main speaker at the convention here. And I have four of my babies with me. And they're running around. And they say, "What was that woman's name who did the woman's meeting? The ladies seem to like her. We got to find her." Now, we're in a big hotel. We didn't even know the woman's name. And I'm sitting on the bed rocking. And there was a knock on the door. And they all ran to the door. And somebody said, "Anybody got a match?" It was her. It was Doreen. The woman who chaired the woman's meeting. You tell me I don't have a higher power. That's right. And she came in and she sat on the bed across from me and she held my hands and she says, "Honey, let me tell you something. I wasn't going to go to the banquet." She said, "But I'm going to go put my dress on. I'm going down to that banquet because I want to watch God come into your life. You're having a spiritual awakening. Don't even know it." And I stood at a podium just like this in a room full of my babies. And I looked over the top of them and I said, "God, please don't let them know my pain and turmoil. Please don't let them know." And it was as though there was no light, but something happened, and I felt God put his arms around me and bring me through that. And that's the best tape I ever did. And after that meeting that night, I asked Doreen to be my sponsor. I have an NA sponsor, and I work these steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And I work them one at a time the way they're supposed to be done. I sponsor women today. I'm very involved with the women today. I do a lot of women's raps. Because women have a problem with women. They feel threatened by them. I never had this problem. No woman ever took my man. They didn't have enough nerve. When a woman came up and spoke to my man, she says, "Hi, how you doing?" So women weren't a threat to me. I just didn't want to be weak, and I didn't want to be myself. I had fought all my life not to be myself. And the women of this program teach me how to be myself. Because they pull me on my shit. See, I can talk to men. I know that game. We all do. But because I have the love of the women in this program, they pull me on my shit. And we work on it together. I don't care how much time don't mean nothing. If you're not working the program of Narcotics Anonymous, working those steps, writing them till your fingers fall out. I am doing my book and still doing my steps. And the one thing I learned, as painful as this book is, layer by layer, I am undoing what I allowed life to do to me. I'm getting through it. And I have a great relationship with my sponsor and myself. And I have a better relationship even with my higher power. You know, I believe God lives in all of us. I believe that God lives in me as me. And I believe that God lives in you as you. And I pray to God that the God that lives in me touches the God that lives in you this night. And that you hear what I say when I tell you, don't walk in my shoes. I flushed 30-some years down the drain. You know why? Because I was against the wall being fucking cool. See, I watched the circus go by. I never saw the damn circus. Because I was being cool. I have twins. And there was people on Donahue one day who had twins, and I can't tell you about my children's childhood. You can get married and have kids bring home "I love you, mommy" papers. I will never know that joy because I was cool. Do me a favor. Don't be cool. I'm so lame today, and I'll do anything you say to get even lamer. There's nothing cool about me today, honey. That's right. And I'm a lady today. About 4 or 5 years ago, I had pneumonia. I thought I was going to die. And I said, I can't. I gotta leave a message for my babies. They got to understand that they can't walk in my shoes. They've got to make a life for themselves. They have to believe in themselves. They have to work this program and make a life for themselves. Go get it, because it's not going to come to you. And I wrote this thing. It's a prayer. And it's called The Junkie Mother. To all my clean babies in NA, if you're clean and you're in here, you belong to me. The junkie mother, that's me. Now through you, my dreams can come true. Remember my years, heavy with sorrow. Make of those years a torch for tomorrow. Make my past a road to light. Believe in yourself till none push you down. Look upward to the stars, for I will be with you till no one dare keeps you down. The children of a junkie mother from Blaze. Thank you.